Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show, and I'm Susie Perez. I'm one of your hosts, and I'm sitting across from my smiling co-host there. Good morning, Chris Bessler.
Good morning, Susie. We had two whole weeks off.
I know, wasn't that wild?
Yeah, just because Wednesdays happened to be when the holidays fell this year, so we took those days off, and are y'all recharged?
I am, and that was the first time that's happened to us, I think, since we've been doing this for over 5 years on a Wednesday.
5 years. That's kind of amazing.
Here we go. Yeah. Year six. And this is Wednesday, January 8th, and we are live in the studio. So thanks for again for tuning in. And we have guests in the studio. Why don't you tell us what's happening today for our guests?
Okay, we have two guests here. We have Bill Davis from the Bonner County Daily Bee. Bill, say hi.
Good morning, everyone.
And we have Lindsay Cabert from the Sandpoint Reader.
Hello.
And we're going to do some a year in review. We're going to talk about the stories that were big in 2019. And then we're going to take a little bit of time and talk about the prognostications for the stories that are going to be big in this year, 2020. So it's going to be a fun rehash of what went on in our town, what just happened, and a little bit of guesswork at what's coming up.
Really focusing on local issues and things that came up last year.
All
and
local.
Looking forward. We all are doing that right now. And so, but we start out with the weather. It's kind of an interesting forecast coming up. Right now, it's kind of calm. We've recovered from the last snow. It's 37 degrees out. And today, rain, snow, it'll probably be rain since the high today is 40. And we have a 70% chance of precipitation. Then the temperature is going to drop. Tonight's low is 22, diminished chance of precipitation. But I'm going to swing all the way up to Friday, we have a 90% chance of snow and a high of 29. And I added up the numbers. We could get a foot and a half of snow between Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So keep those snow shovels handy, folks. It's not over yet. We've just really probably begun. But up on the mountain, you can't even imagine what that's going to look like. So on Friday, we have a 90% chance. Friday night, 100% chance. And Saturday, 90 to 70% chance. And the temperatures really don't get above freezing, let's see, except for Saturday evening, I think it gets, or Saturday, it gets to 35 maybe. So there you go, snow in the forecast. And then the other thing that's significant is the first part of next week, it's going to get really cold. It gets down to zero, according to the National Weather Service.
Wow, so we're getting some real winter here.
Yep, here we go.
I'll mention a couple other things happening outside. The sunrise was at 7:36 a.m. this morning. It'll sit at 4:08 p.m. Over the course of the last week, I'm happy to report, the days are getting longer now. We've gained 8 minutes of daylight per day. So we're on the upside now, getting as we start approaching the spring solstice. Couple other things. If we get some clear weather, it doesn't sound like there's going to necessarily be too much of that, but Venus is a really big bright star right now. It's in the west, so if you're out at night and look up and see a big bright star, that's Venus. And you were wondering about Schweitzer, and they're loving it. They got 5 more inches overnight. The temperature right now is 28 degrees, so they stayed cold enough for snow up there. It's 25 degrees up at the summit, and over the past 48 hours, they've had 2 feet of snow, 24 inches.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Well, there you go. I'm sure that's what they were hoping for all along.
Yep, they're loving it.
We have a brief announcement from the Sandpoint City Minute. The National Weather Service, as I just mentioned, is calling for a series of winter storms in the coming week, with some snow accumulation, actually quite a bit. They want to remind folks that this is Priority 3 parking. Restrictions are in effect until March 1st. And that looks like, per the restrictions on city parking, is restricted to only the even side of the street unless posted otherwise from November 1st through March 1st. Another thing is the comprehensive plan survey was just released for the third comprehensive plan survey. And that one is focusing on public facilities, services, and utilities. You can go to their website at sandpointidaho.gov and take the survey. This is one way folks say they want to be involved in their city government. They want to have a voice. Here is one way to have a voice. They have all kinds of surveys coming up all the way through February 2nd on different subjects. And also the last thing to mention is Christmas tree disposal. Anyone who lives in Sandpoint city limits can drop their Christmas tree off for free at any time during the month of January in the lot behind the city shop on Airport Way. But they have a wonderful website, tons of information. Again, sandpointidaho.gov is where you can get more of that information. Also want to remind our listeners, we are recording this morning's show, so if you don't get to hear it all, you can go to our website later in the day and listen to the whole thing. And that podcast is at krfy.org.
And mentioned just a couple things going on around town. It's relatively quiet after the holidays, but there's something, if you're a singer or a musician, there's something to pay attention to here. The Pondere Arts Council is having auditions on Saturday for their upcoming Northern Stars Rising performance. That's going to be held in February. But if you'd like to be part of that, it's a stage production, then check it out. Or you could probably go to the artinsandpoint.org website. That's for the Pondere Arts Council, and see what's involved with showing up for the auditions. And other things going on around town. Like I said, it's relatively quiet. There's a documentary that's screening at the Panda Little Theater called Honeyland on Thursday through Sunday. There's a contra dance at Sandpoint Community Hall on Friday. And there's an event called the 2020 Volunteer Connect at the Idaho Poor Authority. That's tonight, actually. So if you have want to get more details on any of this, then go to our website, krfy.org. Check out the community calendars, get details on all this and all the stuff that's coming up in upcoming weeks. Those are provided by Sandpoint Online.
That's wonderful, and we really thank Sandpoint Online for that. But also, you can go to our Facebook page, and please like us. I'm trying to get us, we're hoping to get to the next level with folks liking us on Facebook, and you would get selective and well-designed postings on what's going on here at 88.5 KRFY, your community radio station.
And with that, let's get on to today's topic. Again, we have with us Bill Davis from the Bonner County Daily Bee and Lindsay Cabert from the Sandpoint Reader. We're going to be doing a year in review, a little bit of prognosticating about the year to come. But let's start out with what happened in 2019. And let's kind of just throw it open. And we'll start with you, Bill. Why don't you give us what you thought were a couple of the biggest stories or the most impactful stories that happened here locally last year?
Sure. Thanks, Chris. And first, I want to say thanks for having me on your program. I appreciate that very much and look forward to getting to know everyone here. You know, I've had a great opportunity to review 2019 and some of the what I think are the more impactful headlines that we covered. And while there are several, there's a couple that stand out to me. For one, the revitalization, the downtown revitalization project for Sandpoint. I think that's a huge thing for us. And you know, there are pluses and minuses. You know, there are short-term impacts to the businesses during the construction, development, that sort of thing, traffic. I think that's very impactful. And, of course, on the other side of that is once it's finished, you know, it's going to have it's going to be received very well, and I think it's going to bode very well for the local businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, of course, is the reconstruction of First Avenue that took place during the fall, and there's more to come because
yes.
They still have to come back and do the sidewalk work when we get back to warm weather. And that's a continuation of the revitalization project that actually started last year, the previous year, with Cedar Street. So Cedar Street is kind of a preview of what's coming on First Avenue with the bulb outs and the wider sidewalks and the new pavement.
And, you know, the downtown businesses really put up with a lot during this phase, the current phase of the revitalization. And I know everyone was very happy around Thanksgiving when the streets opened back up. So I just want to give a shout out to the downtown businesses for their patience and their congeniality about this. But I also want to encourage people to shop locally, because that's, you know, really makes up the difference for any losses that they might have had. And I think the Christmas season was really good for them.
Yeah. I agree totally. So my wife and I are relatively new to the community, and I'll tell you, as we're shopping downtown and walking and perusing the downtown area, we've commented a lot that how beautiful Sandpoint is, and it's kind of a Hallmark card, if you will. You know, when we're experiencing and patronizing the businesses here, I can't wait to see in the summertime when it opens up, and we've got a lot of tourists in town, and I think it's going to bode well for everyone. Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's interesting. I think we have a gorgeous little downtown as
yes.
well. And before we even started the revitalization project, it has had some controversy. There's some folks that hate the bulb outs. There's some folks that they don't like the fact that you have to really slow down to go through the downtown now. But I will mention it was part of a design planning process. It was years in the making, and there was a decision that they wanted to quiet traffic in the downtown and slow people down. And you don't do that just with signs, really. What you do it with is the design of the downtown. And so the bulb outs, while they might seem like they're obstructing things, they are intended to make drivers slow down. And of course, in a business area where you have a lot of people out on the street, that's what you want. You want the cars to slow down.
And you've said it about five times, and that's exactly right. That's what I was going to say, is it only probably will take you once hitting one of those curbs. But if you slow down ahead of time, you won't have a problem. And it makes it a whole lot safer for pedestrians. That is kind of part of the key that you're talking about, is that people walking around and crossing the streets will feel comfortable on those designated crosswalks.
And it is a walking town.
There you go.
No doubt about it. So, yeah. And people do like to walk here. So what would you say, what would be another big one for you, Bill?
You know, when I was reviewing, the other one was, I think it was it last February, there was a pretty large fire that devastated, what was it, like five businesses. I would say that was a very impactful thing to endure and experience and definitely had a lasting effect on the community.
Yeah. And of course, right now we have like a giant kind of hole in the downtown where that those businesses were located there at the corner of Bridge Street and First Avenue. Maybe Lindsay, do you know? Have you got any word on that? Do you know what the rebuild plan is? Because I believe they're going to start construction here in this year.
Yeah, so I'm not sure about the timeline, but we received confirmation that the Hound is going to rebuild, and we heard the entire space will be dedicated to the Hound moving forward. Again, that was a few months ago, so plans may have changed. I personally liked the rumor that 7B Board Shop was going to turn it into a skateboard park, but I don't think that's going to happen.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
You could get some good drop there, because it is pretty steep down into the basement area, what was formerly the basement area. But I agree. I had that on my list as well, Bill, that the downtown fire was a major story, and it has had a major impact on the downtown and even the folks that frequent those five businesses, and of course the business owners and the employees themselves. Lindsay, your turn. What would you say was a top story in 2019?
Well, at The Reader, I cover mostly the county. I also have some pet topics outside of the county, one of those being the smelter, the proposed smelter in Newport. I've been following it really closely this year as the Pendre County Commissioners were considering a rezone that would rezone all areas in Pendre County known as public land. People own that land, but basically, there's very few things they can do with that land. One of those landowners is PacWest Silicon, which are behind the proposed smelter. Just recently, a few weeks ago, it was official after a couple appeals and lots of debate. The commissioners struck down that blanket rezone, which, and I have on the record from PacWest that they can't do anything to move forward until their property is rezoned. And so I've been trying to reach out to them, get confirmation that this is still true. Haven't heard from them, but the Public Utility District in Pend Oreille County did recently give PacWest a letter, send them a letter that said, here's your money back. We haven't heard from you in 6 months. What's going on? Let us know if you want to reapply. And that is for running power to the smelter, which doesn't appear to be happening at the moment. So no confirmation from PacWest yet, but I think looking into 2020, that will likely continue being a story.
Do you have any idea why the commissioners did not pass the blanket rezone?
So I do have comment from Commissioner Kiss that, and he was very adamant that their decision had nothing to do with the smelter, but he did say that that rezone could be better discussed when they do their 2020 comprehensive plan discussions in the coming year. So I don't think it's in the past.
Exactly. That story got a lot of headlines, but the reality is there's still a process in place for PacWest to get the zoning they want with this review of the comprehensive plan.
Yes. Yeah. The fact that we haven't heard from them in a while, though, does add, thickens the plot.
Yeah. And plus the fact that they got that feedback from the PUD. So who knows what's really going on there, but it's an interesting situation. Of course, a lot of locals are really, why do you think locals are so concerned about that? That's over in Washington. Oh,
well, there's a lot of debate about what a smelter could mean for, air quality, watersheds throughout the region. There's a lot of different voices coming at that topic, and nothing super definitive, but we do know that there's a really strong voice of opposition to the smelter in that realm of things.
It makes me wonder why a big utility or a big company like PacWest Silicon would buy a large piece of property knowing that it wasn't currently zoned in a certain way, just hoping it would get rezoned, or, they can just pull out and find another piece somewhere else. But I guess we can talk about that in the preview part, mm-hmm. or the other part of this
predictions.
Day.
Predictions,
that's what I meant.
If there's one to be had, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, what would you say another big story was your beat there, Lindsay?
Well, from my beat.
Lindsay, from the standpoint
well,
of here.
Well, Bonner County was definitely active this year. Lots of topics that the public was really passionate about. I hate to monopolize probably the biggest story of the year, but the festival weapons ban, the county came out with a letter asking them to basically saying that weapons ban was against Idaho state code. And so that's an ongoing thing, covering it every week, checking in on it every week. Everything with the festival, really. I have listed here that turf could ultimately mean changes for the festival. There's a lot of things happening with the festival, so.
Yeah, those two things are kind of tied together. But let's just talk about the gun issue for the moment. So the deal there is that there were some individuals that tried to carry arms into the festival this year. They were really kind of challenging the festival's no arms policy. Mm-hmm. And the festival has adopted in the last couple years, they actually use scanners now when you enter the field, so they can look for weapons. My understanding, you correct me on this, but that's some of the artists are actually requiring a no guns policy.
From what I understand, most musicians at this point will not play shows where weapons are allowed.
Yeah, so so that's right there. Of course, if there was such a ban was not in place, then we might see the festival unable to book a lot of acts that that might play well here otherwise.
Yeah, a lot of that right now is speculation, but that is something that I've heard from several people in the community.
The county is suing the city. The city's posture is they're leasing the field to the festival, and therefore the festival has the right to impose rules for their event. What's the status right now? Because it's gone to a lawsuit, and there it's up, as I understand, for a declaratory judgment hearing.
Yes. So as of right now, the county has filed a lawsuit seeking a declaratory judgment, basically determining whether the city is violating Idaho state law by allowing the festival to have a weapons ban. It's got several layers. There was supposed to be I forget the term, but basically like an initial hearing where they kind of set a timeline for the suit. That was supposed to happen last month. The judge was sick, and so it was postponed to this month, January 28th. So that will probably give us a better idea of the kind of timeline. I've heard from a few people at the county that these declaratory judgments don't take very long to settle. However, I don't have any confirmation on that from the judge, so I guess we'll see how it goes on January 28th.
Do you know if in the state of Idaho anything like this has come up? Is there any precedent set so far in a case like this? Other communities that have private parties have rented public venues for private and had their own rules set.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it with too much authority because I wasn't following it very closely, but I believe there's a couple counties in Idaho where county fairs were faced with this same issue, and not positive, but I'm pretty sure they were told that they would need to allow weapons because it was public property.
Right, but the policy is far-reaching, and it could very well end up in the state Supreme Court to make a decision. For instance, in Sandpoint, it would also apply to facilities that the city leases to a private company right now, and under that policy, that company would not be able to prohibit guns being carried into their business, their place of business.
Yeah, there's a couple locations in Sandpoint. Yeah,
I think Bonner General Health.
Bonner General, I believe the business incubator.
The former business incubator.
It definitely would set. However this is decided will also apply to other places in the county as well.
And there, I know there are venues probably in cities all around the state, in Boise too, where this would be setting a precedent. So it's probably going to be a case that does go up the ladder to higher courts to decide. That would be my guess, if I was going to guess.
When I think about in Boise, public versus private, is a university public property? Is that, or is it private? I don't know. But those kind of things.
Universities are indeed, most of them are public. Yeah, but there is a clause that says you can't carry on school properties. But some universities, I'm unclear on that. It could be that universities do allow open carry now.
I believe in Idaho that applied. Sometime in like 2014 when I started going to college at U of I, because I had a journalism professor talking about it when it first went into effect.
Yeah. So that's a good question, but I don't think anybody here really has the hard answer on that. So, Lindsay, how much have we spent suing ourselves? Because taxpayers are paying for the county to sue the city. So the people living in the city are paying twice, but if you live out in the county, you're
And that's a big point of contention in this issue. As of right now, and I received a records request response in mid-December, as of right now, and Zach's been covering the city side, so I can't say for sure what the city spent. I know it's definitely under $10,000, I think somewhere
around
eight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the county has spent $28,510.
Yeah. So we're a little over $36,000 of taxpayer money expended on it so far.
Sounds like it.
We're just getting started.
So buckle in.
Buckle in, taxpayers. Okay, Susie.
I had one big thing that happened here at KRFY that we're very excited about and happy about. The high school journalism department with teacher Mike Bill Love. What's his name? Will Love.
Will Love.
Will Love. Bill Love. That's his dad. They took on having part of the Cedar Post have an audio or broadcast component. And so every Thursday at 3, we call it CP at 3, Cedar Post at 3, is being broadcast here on KRFY. It's also rebooted at 10 o'clock on Friday nights. And we just love Connor Bird is here every Thursday with his podcast of his show for Thursday afternoon. And so a shout out to Connor Bird and Will Love for making this possible. And also Emmy Lynch. She's the head of the whole Cedar Post as a student. And so that's really exciting for us. We've been trying to do this for, 8 years? And here we are. Yeah. We made it.
Well, we actually got kicked off last year with Ryan.
I was going to say, and also thank you, Ryan Baumgartner, for actually being the first student journalist, broadcast journalist here at KRFY. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Pathblazer there. Well, I have a couple that I'll pick. I mean, I thought the guns one is probably the one with the biggest impact, not just locally, but probably going to be statewide.
And it'll have legs. It'll keep going for a little while here, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's hitting the courts now. So it could be years, actually. So I pick, as one of my big ones, the new parks plan. You kind of touched on that. The city engaged in a planning process for all the major city parks, came up with plans for four of them, the Traverse Park Complex, Memorial Field, City Beach, and also the Sandpoint Landing there, which is right on Sand Creek. And the one that really made news so far is Memorial Field, as you mentioned, because the city council voted to adopt the plan that was presented by their consultant for Memorial Field. It changes the configuration of the field a good amount. It puts in actually two baseball fields, one for softball, one for baseball. And the fields kind of overlap if you look at the site plan. So you only be able, and they overlap themselves, but they also overlap the football field. And there are a number of other changes to the park, including a new dog park that would be down along the water, some plans to kind of open up the waterfront and make it more accessible, to add parking. But the big one was artificial turf. And there was quite a contentious discussion of whether or not the Memorial Field should be resurfaced with natural grass and an improved natural grass surface, or with artificial turf. It came down to a split vote in the city council, 3-3, and Mayor Ronstadt voted for artificial turf. And they're going to begin, that's going to be a story all this year, because they're going to be starting construction in early spring. Right now they're in an engineering process and they're going out for bids for the work that's to be done.
And Lindsay, since you've been covering the festival and all that happening, with the artificial turf, it's going to impact the festival in a certain way as far as putting up the tent and folks using the field. So do you know anything about that?
Something I find really intriguing that maybe some people haven't thought about is that tent, that iconic tent that is the festival's tent, the field is going to need certain hardware built into it in order to support that tent. And so the entire field will
anchors
need to be
for the tent.
Yeah, anchors for the tent. So that field will have to be laid out with that tent in mind.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll have like some divot areas where that they can pull the artificial turf out and put the anchors in. It'll be designed specifically for the tent. Mm-hmm. They won't be able to apparently put up the small tents that all the food vendors use. So that could be some big change. I don't know if they'll be able to go to a different kind of tent that doesn't have to be pegged down.
Yeah, I heard a rumor about maybe utilizing the sidewalk where people normally line up. There may be an entire restructuring happening. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Yeah, the impacts on the festival will be big.
Yeah, just a slightly side note, but in the same geography anyway, is Jerry Kramer Way, right? So he received the recognition and yeah, right there at War Memorial Field. Now mm-hmm. It's Jerry Kramer Way. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, so Jerry Kramer, in case you don't know, he's the NFL Hall of Famer that came out of Sandpoint High School and was just elected to the Hall of Fame. I think it was in last February or something.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Yes, it was. And then May 22nd is Jerry Kramer Day here. So
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There
yeah.
you go.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. So, I consider that to be a pretty big deal. It's actually a sea change for Memorial Field itself. It's going to bring big changes to the neighborhood as well. The artificial turf means they'll be having many more practices and athletic activities there. So the neighborhood is going to see a lot more traffic. And of course, the neighbors were concerned about that. It was part of the contentious debate. And we'll just see how the construction goes. Hopefully it goes well.
Well, there we go. Is that pretty much all of our looking back?
No.
No, Chris Scott. No, I just want to remind our listeners, if they just tuned in, this is 88.5 KRFY. You're listening to the Wednesday edition of The Morning Show on this Wednesday, January 8th. And we're here with Chris and Susie as hosts. And the Sandpoint Reader, we have Lindsay Kibert. And from the Daily Bee, we have Bill Davis. So we're talking about what happened last year. And pretty soon we're going to get to predictions. But it sounds like Chris has something else. But if you've don't forget, we are also podcasting this. If you only get a snippet of it this morning, you can listen at later at KRFY.org.
So my second big story that I identified for the year that passed, of course, were the elections. Elections are always news. We had city elections for mayor and council, and in that it was a pretty well-contested mayoral race. And incumbent mayor Shelby Ronstadt had two folks opposing him. He won rather handily by a bit larger margin than I would have guessed, considering there were two folks opposing him. And then the incumbent city council person, Deb Rule, was reelected, and there were new council members, Kate McAllister and Andy Grote, who were elected. And that, of course, happened in November. And then, speaking of elections, we had not one but two school district levy elections last year. There was a levy that passed in March that comes up every 2 years. It's a supplemental levy. They call it a supplemental levy, but it now accounts for almost actually over a third of the schools operating, the school district's operating funds. That passed in March, passed by a pretty good margin. And then in November, the school district presented a proposal that the levy be, because it's been passed for 20 years, every time it's come up, that the levy just be made continuing or permanent. And that passed by a much closer margin, by just a couple hundred votes in November. And then there was a challenge to it, the way the ballot was worded. And we're going to have to see how that plays out. So I thought elections, they're always news. So they were big ones in 2019. I think we have time to go. Let's pick one more from last year, and then let's talk about what's coming up. Bill, what would you say another story from 2019 was one that people shouldn't be thinking about?
Well, you know, on a local level, anytime there's a change with a school superintendent, I think that's a very newsworthy topic. I mean, we're all near and dear to our local schools and our children and what happens there. And so I know that there was a school superintendent change where the incumbent had decided to go over to Washington, and so I look forward to seeing what happens as we go forward with that change. But I would definitely pick that as a good local topic of significance. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of my proudest moments of 2019, you know, being a journalist, you are always proud to break the story first, right? I'm driving to work, I believe it was a Thursday or Friday, one of my slower days, and my phone goes off and I just glance over at it. It's an email. Tom Albertson's the new superintendent of Lake Pondere School District. I pulled over faster than I probably should have, and I got right on Facebook, posted a picture of Tom on the Sandpoint Reader page to let everybody know. It was good. Ben was pretty proud.
You were out there first with it. Yeah, so Tom Albertson replaced Sean Woodward. I think Sean was on board for, what, six years?
7 years.
7 years.
Yeah.
Sean made great progress with the school district. The level of academic achievement just keeps going up. Tom was the Sandpoint High School principal for many years, and he was a math teacher before that. So, you know, watch your math around this guy.
<Uh-oh>. He knows his numbers.
Yeah. And I think that everybody was pretty happy with that choice. They did interview a couple of folks from out of town, but I think everybody felt like, yeah, going with the guy that knows our district, that's been working in our district. And Tom he's a fourth generation local, so he certainly knows the community. Okay, Lindsay, do you have another story?
Are we still looking at,
that you'd mentioned?
Still looking at 2019?
Yeah, 2019.
Can I do a fun one?
Yeah,
okay.
It's your choice.
This summer, we got a tip that there's a cat here in Sandpoint, I believe it's South Sandpoint, who was stealing flip-flops. I don't know. I wish I would have noted which reader we had this in. It was our cover story. Ben wrote about it. Great double-page spread. Wentworth the cat. he had the habit of taking the neighbor's flip-flops. And it was actually really funny. There were a couple of instances where people would leave their flip-flops on the porch and they'd go missing. And they'd be like, oh, darn kids. Or, oh, I must have left them at the festival or something. Oh, no, it was Wentworth. And he'd been hiding them at his house. And so his owner finally found out, put all the flip-flops in a bag and walked around the neighborhood. Like, do any of these belong to you? And that was one of my favorite stories of the year.
Yeah, that's you Facebooked that one too.
I think so,
Didn't you get a lot of traction? I thought
lots of shares, I believe.
Yeah, lots of shares.
It was a feel-good.
Comments, yeah. Everybody loved that story. Susie, did you have another one you'd
want
to pull
just
up?
A comment on the permanent levy being passed. I'm just curious how much is going to be saved financially by not having to do a supplemental levy campaign every 2 years, not just financial, but time and energy of so many people. So I don't want to say if it was a good move or not, but the money saved is always a good thing to look at. So that's my comment.
Okay, there's a comment. I'm going to throw together two little things, smaller stories together that I think are still significant. And one would be that the YMCA came to town. Mm-hmm. They purchased the Sandpoint West Athletic Center. They had their grand opening in July. A Lighthouse chipped in a bunch of money for it, so it's actually officially the Lighthouse YMCA. And that's a great move for our town. And it was nice to see the Helanders, who ran the SWAC for so many years, have this great handoff to a really great organization. And then kind of in the same vein of health and recreation, the Pine Street Woods opened in September. And that, of course, was a project of the Kinnicksu Land Trust. And they mounted actually it was only about 18-month campaign to raise $2.1 million to acquire that property, to make some improvements on it. And this is, it's up Pine Street. If you haven't been there, you should definitely go check it out. It's open to the public every day. It's up Pine Street, and you go just about a quarter mile past Selkirk School. On the left, there's signage, and you can go up on the property, and it's happening right now in winter because they are having they're grooming ski trails for Nordic skiers. There's also snowshoeing as well and snow biking up there.
And they have a little hut there where you can actually rent cross-country skis.
Yeah, and get in and get
and
warm.
And there's people there that will help you.
Yeah. So it's getting a ton of use already. Have you been up, Lindsay or Bill?
I haven't, but I had the same topic I was going to mention about their grand opening. I think that's very significant.
Yeah,
for us.
Yeah.
So, I haven't been up yet, but it's on.
There's 160 acres, and in the course of raising the campaign to raise that money, an adjacent landowner donated 20 acres to it. That's contiguous to the property. Really. Which was a wonderful thing. He's an elderly man who inherited the property from his grandparents who homesteaded there. And he didn't want to see it developed, and he thought this was a great cause for it. So that was a wonderful thing as well.
Yep. Shout out to Kinnicksu Land Trust for that hard work, and our community benefits greatly from that. So we could take a short music break, or I think we should just go into what we think's coming up, because we can just go right to the top of the hour with that. I'm sure we have about 20 minutes left.
Okay. So I think, Bill, you're first on the docket here. What's a story or two that you predict is going to be something to watch and be significant this coming year?
Right. So there are a couple of things. But first off, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with the like you mentioned earlier, the recent election of the city council. I can't wait to see throughout this year what happens there and what impact that really does have. So I think we'll be following that closely. We all know about this train derailment that just happened. Just a quick side note on that. It was fun. Tragic that it happened, but it was fun in terms of covering. Dylan Green, who's our sports writer and photographer, he and I hopped on an airplane and flew out there and took some aerial photographs of the train derailment.
This was in the Kootenai River Canyon upstream of Bonner's Ferry, a few miles.
You got it. Mm-hmm. You got it. And
put one of the engines into the river. Actually.
Submerged, yeah. And a crew of two, rescued safely, but mm-hmm. they were standing out on top of the engine for a water rescue. And it was fun to take some aerial photography of that, but it brings to mind a couple of things, and that's the environmental impact. And I'm already receiving A lot of inquiries from our readers at the Daily Bee that they're curious, what is the environmental impact? And I think that that's something that we'll probably follow closely and see how that may or may not unfold as we head into 2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another kind of corollary to that is we are probably going to see some activity on the second long, railroad bridge that's going to be built across Lake Ponderé. I'm not sure what that status is at this stage, but BNSF is moving ahead with that.
Well, when you think about how prevalent it is, and you know, for somebody like myself and my wife coming new to Northern Idaho, it's pretty prevalent, the train system here, right? There's no doubt about it. It's pretty impressive that, for the most part, the U.S. economy passes through Northern Idaho several times a day.
Yeah, yeah, it's called the funnel, actually.
The funnel.
Because all the northern tier lines have to come through Sandpoint just by virtue of the geography. Yeah, that's why we have over 40, I think they're supposed to be limited to 60 a day, but with the new track, they'll be able to increase that limit. So yeah, yeah, there will be more train traffic in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up next to the train in Hope, and I don't even hear trains at this point. Yeah, when I hear someone say that they just moved here and, oh, trains are prevalent, I'm like, oh, wait, trains aren't just a fact of life everywhere else?
Right, right.
Yeah, so that's a... interesting reality check there.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, and I'm resisting the getting used to the horns blowing. You know, I'm fighting that one.
But, right. Well, Bill, you said you had a couple things. So what else do you have?
Yeah,
looking forward.
Well, it was the city council and the train derailment, I think, is big. I think, you know, it's an election year. So I think, you know, as we watch how that unfolds throughout the year and looking at how that, how Idaho fits into that whole process. I think that's going to be big for us in 2020.
Lindsay, what do you think is going to be big?
All right. I think that we are finally going to hear from PacWest Silicon at some point this year, get an update. Are they still looking at Newport? Are they not? Are they looking somewhere else? I think 2020 will bring some answers, hopefully, because I'm tired of asking them and not hearing anything. And then also, I mean, the festival has seen a lot of changes just in the last half a year. So, I mean, we've got new leadership. We've got a new surface on the field coming in. We've got this lawsuit with the county, between the county and city regarding the festival's weapons ban. So I think that will obviously come to a head, especially when festival season comes around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a turning point year for the festival, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so too.
Hopefully it weathers it.
So those are my two big ones for 2020 that I'll continue keeping an eye on. Also, I think as the legislative session opens this week, there's a couple issues from last year that I'm definitely going to keep an eye on, especially the initiatives process and all the debates surrounding that. Our representative, actually, Sage Dixon, was really involved in that last year, and I imagine that he will continue to be a part of that.
So. Actually, we had Sage on, and Sage says that's not going to be something that he is going to be the... out on the lead on.
Well, that's what I get for not listening.
We'll see how it develops, though, because things can go a different way.
That interview is on our website, so
excellent.
You can go back and listen to it. It is worth listening
that's
to.
That's what I'm going to do as soon as I leave here.
He did say that the only thing he saw coming against the citizens' initiative process would be having to put financial disclaimers or financial information into the process.
Okay.
If you're initiating.
Yeah, and if you're not up to speed on that issue, the initiative process is to is a set of rule of restrictions, basically, to make the initiative process a little harder.
Yeah. So when citizens want to bring something to the ballot on their own, such as the Medicaid expansion from 2018, that is when you would use the initiative process.
So at the risk of igniting controversy, I don't want to do that, but I do want to comment on an observation. Myself being relatively new to the community, but it strikes me very interesting coming into a beautiful community like Sandpoint and Bonner County, and there's a lot of growth here, a lot of folks that are retiring, a lot of folks that are coming into the area, and I find it an interesting observation that the very thing that lures folks into our community, that you know, the romantic part of Sandpoint, brings folks in from outside, from other areas. And they come for those reasons, But then they want to make it like where they came from, so they start implementing changes and legislative modifications to sort of make it like a home where they've relocated from, and it's at the risk of changing the very essence of what lured them here to begin mm-hmm. with, if that makes any sense.
Lindsay, you are the native in the room.
Am I the only native in the room?
You are.
Born and raised, Hope and Clark Fork.
That's right.
Don't talk smack about Clark Fork.
What do you think about that comment on change?
I think it's something that comes up constantly. And being someone who's really involved in local events, because it is my job to cover them, you know, I don't know. I'd like to hear more concrete, you know, on a day when we can have a longer discussion, more concrete examples of where those things are taking place. Because I'm still learning. I'm still seeing how things are changing. Sure.
Yeah, and I'll say, you know, I haven't lived here only a little over 40 years. Actually, I've lived here longer than you.
Yeah, I've only lived here 23 and a half, so.
You may be the native, but I got some few years on you. Sandpoint is still a sweet place. You know, it has changed, but some of the change has been really good. That we have a cultural vibrancy with the arts and entertainment that is excellent for a town of just 8,000 people. That's it for change.
I just wanted to comment on what Bill is talking about, folks coming in. And what I've noticed, because I've been helping friends try to find a place to live, regular people sure. who have 9-to-5 jobs, and maybe it's a couple with each has a job, but they cannot find any housing. They right. cannot buy. And rents have gone sky high. So part of that influx and that change in our dynamics here has caused a crisis in housing. So I'm curious how that's going to look even in the next year or the years to come.
Certainly. And it's going to continue to grow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In a world with 8 billion people, we're going to get our share.
Yes.
Okay. I have a few prognostications as to big stories in the coming year. I think the city parks planning process is going to continue, right? The next thing they're going to roll into is the city beach plan. To make the city beach plan happen as it's currently proposed by the city consultant, with a number of changes to city beach. If listeners haven't checked that out, they should go to the City Sandpoint website and see what the changes planned for the city beach are. But to make that happen, they would really have to affect a chain land swap with the Edgewater, the Sand Ida company that operates the Edgewater. And that's going to be a lot of controversy there about whether or not they should do that land swap. I don't know, judging on the way they ran the Memorial Field decision through, I don't know how much public comment will come into play there, because they didn't really allow much time for public comment on the Memorial Field plan. But that's next up. If you're interested or concerned about that, do pay attention to that. There are also plans for Traverse Park and Sandpoint Landing that will be also weighed out as well. Part of that, of course, another change to throw out a mention on that, Edgewater is going to be torn down. I think that's happening this year if they stay on track with it. And they're going to be starting construction of a new hotel, and that's going to wipe out that lodging place here for, if they do get started this year, as they say, if they have announced in the past, then that's going to be a big change on the community. And then also tying in with that, the city, you mentioned elections. Of course, yes. Elections are going to be a big story during yes. the course of the year. There yes. are two county commissioners up, other county offices, all three legislators are going to be up locally here. One that isn't even on the radar yet is that the city was almost certainly going to seek to renew the local option 1% sales tax. It expires this year, and that is the funding source for the improvement to the parks. Mm-hmm. And they're almost certainly going to ask city residents to approve that again. It's a local option tax. It's only available to recreation towns of a population less than 10,000. Mm-hmm. So there's also concerns that with the census coming on this year, Sandpoint could actually measure up and have more than 10,000. So there might be just a narrow window for them to get this approved anyways. So look for that to come up. It takes a 60% majority to say yes, we'll continue the 1 cent sales tax. It's a penny on the dollar for things that are purchased in Sandpoint. Pondere just, we've had that in place here for 5 years now. Pondere just approved it, so it's going to go into effect in Pondere as well. And
so just, you know, this has nothing at all to do with what you just spoke about, but I think that's very profound information. I just want to also take a moment to recognize how much giving goes on in this community. So, you know, Cindy, my wife, and I, we got here in November, and through the holidays, one of the things that stood out tremendously to us was all of the volunteerism, the donations, the giving, and the charitable efforts. You know, just for example, the Toys for Tots campaign, and there are many more. But that stands out to some newcomers like myself and my wife. And so I just want to recognize that.
Yeah,
that is so nice. You know, to look, and especially from someone who just moved here, you really noticed it.
Yeah,
and I think it does make our community special. And for all the challenges we may have over the years, that has been a constant. We have a lot of nonprofits. KRFY is one of them, serving the community the best we can. And Chris, when you're talking, and when we're talking about elections, we have a whole bunch of really cool interviews coming up. But we will have the election officials, because there's some key dates for registering or claiming, or, you know, saying what group you want to be with, things like that. And we'll also have the school district, and we'll have the city of Sandpoint, the mayor and the administrator. All those are coming up in the next month or so.
Right on.
Okay. Anybody got anything else they want to say?
Kind of
how
a
about
wrap
the
up?
Biggest story that didn't get reported much?
Oh. Do you know what that is, Chris?
Well, I had one, but okay. I'll throw mine out first. You guys can cogitate on it. It may be reported on a lot this year, but we had basically a fire-free summer last year. And after a series of summers where we got hit hard by either fires right in our proximity or smoke from fires in the region, we had a blessedly smoke-free summer. It was like good old days, Lindsay, that you remember.
Yeah, well, no, it was really fun to check in with the Idaho Panhandle National Forest public relations gals every so often and be like, so what are we thinking, predictions? And they were very like, we can't promise anything, but things look okay, yeah. You know? And so that was a relief after the last two summers having to be very like, all right, guys, put on your oxygen masks.
Yeah, and it's because we got rain, you know, periodically during the summer. It was a beautiful summer. It was a gorgeous summer. And if we can have that again this year, I'll be happy to make it a non-story again. No smoke. So no smoke to complain or report about.
So just real quickly, when I think about what you just said, Lindsay, so is it possible to do pre-planning? Are there things that we can do in the planning process, either through the county or the state or even the city, to mitigate that potential?
Well, I mean,
from what you know.
There's all sorts of hypotheses about how we can avoid living in a summer full of smoke, whether it's forest management practices or anything on that large scale. As far as planning ahead, my job is really just to get the first story out that says, hey guys, we're going to have a smoke-free summer, or hey guys, it's going to be a bad one, get ready, you know, take precautions to protect your property, basically. So I start looking ahead sometime in May, I start asking, but they truly don't have any solid predictions until the weather in June happens. Okay. That's kind of what I found.
Pray for snow, right?
So the snowpack really...
Snowpack
is a huge determinant of what happens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it keeps the water tables up and the streams flowing during the summer. So, you know, pray for snow. Yeah. Especially up in the mountains. Okay. Anything else you got? Did you guys have anything you wanted to mention? A story that you thought should have been more of a story last year?
You blindsided me with that one.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's a good question. Yeah.
I had a lot of fun stories that I got to write this year, maybe outside of the news realm, but Zach and I, we poured through all of the issues online this last week, because we wrote, Zach put a year in advance in our January 2nd issue that just came out. It was a double spread. He did everything from national to local, basically, you know, what does he think is going to to be newsworthy, basically what we're doing here. And as we were going through the issues, I realized there were a lot of great stories, and there are just people in this community that I feel so blessed to get to write about. And I got to kind of take a trip down 2019 memory lane, and yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And for you, Bill, it's all new.
Ask me that question in a year.
Okay. Well, I was just thinking while you're sitting here, we should do this quarterly or at least halfway through the year.
That's a great
idea. Visit with both of you. Your journalism expertise can come to the airwaves of 88.5 KRFY. And I just want to quickly, you have something you want to wrap up, Chris?
Well, I just want to say thanks to Bill Davis from the Bonner County Daily Bee. Bill, for being in.
Thank
Welcome
you.
To the town as well,
Thank
since
you.
You're new there. And Lindsay Kaber from the Sandpoint Reader.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been really fun, you guys. So thank you so much. And next week, just to let you know, we'll have some folks, some planners for the Women's Day event that's coming up. And I think that's, yeah, so on the 15th, we'll have them in the studio. And other than that, tomorrow we have Foster Klein on the Thursday edition. He's the local author and presenter of Love and Logic. There is going to be an event at the Panada that he will be showcasing. So there we go.
I had one more thing I wanted to mention, actually earlier up in the broadcast, but the avalanche danger is high in the Selkirk and Cabinet Mountains right now. So if you're out in the backcountry, exercise extreme caution. And in fact, there were two deaths at Silver Mountain in an avalanche yesterday. Yeah. So that's really a sad thing. But even if you're in one of the ski areas, even mm-hmm. though they really do a great job of avalanche control, be aware that when there's a lot of big, heavy snow coming out, it's unpredictable. And if you're in the backcountry, stay out of the avalanche prone areas.
Exactly. Okay, well.
And you can get more information on that if you go to the Idaho Panhandle Avalanche Center, and you can just query that in Google, and it'll take you there, and they have a page that they update every day with the avalanche conditions.
There you go. And okay. Thanks for listening, everyone. This is 88.5 KRFY, your listener-supported commercial-free community radio for North Idaho. And thanks for listening again. We're going to go out with Bruno Mars, Count on Me, and have a great day. And by the way, just so you know, Elvis Presley would be 85 today if he was still alive. It's his birthday. But we're going out with Bruno Mars, Count on Me.
Have a good week.